Often these stories don't get told. It's almost like when you're a goldfish and you ask, like, what is water? It's like you, when you're in it, you don't even realize how creative the schools get. Everything they do.
Trolley Camp for Franklin Matt. It's Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet, WFPR.FM, and in the Franklin Mass FM radio dial 102.9. Here today for a chalkboard chat with our school committee chair, Dave Callahan. Dave, happy Friday. How are you doing today?
Hey, I made it to the end of
You
the
made
week,
it to
so
Friday.
I am fantastic. Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Excellent. And we also have school committee member Ruth Ann O'Sullivan. Ruth Ann, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Steve. I made it as well.
Oh,
So happy
good.
the sunshine. Happy to be with you all.
It is a sunshiny day after some wet and gray days. We at least get some sunshine before more weather comes at us, supposedly. But, we'll take one day at a time. And speaking of one day at a time, we'll spin the clock back. There was the school committee meeting Tuesday, and I missed it because, oh, there was also a presidential primary. So I was at the election polls to get the results. They took a little longer than I anticipated, but I got them. They're out. The video is available. Obviously, there was also a little bit of a YouTube hiccup, I guess, but the full video is out and available. So I've shared those links in the various places. And we can, for those who don't want to watch the, what, 2 hour plus, I think it was, we can kind of recap here in a few minutes, in lesser minutes, and give you the highlights.
Absolutely. And because there was a lot of great highlights. And but I think we had too with that little YouTube hiccup, there was I hadn't seen that many number of participants on Zoom since kind of like those early COVID days. And so I
Okay.
think so we actually heard that there was a bandwidth issue, which is fantastic, I gotta say, because it just there are so many people that are so engaged and want to know about the budget situation, because it's we've been talking about it for quite some time. We've been talking about that fiscal cliff, but now we're standing at the edge figuring out how to take that next step. And everybody was right there to listen in and to join in a part of that conversation. And
Indeed.
so but yeah, so we really just dedicated it to the budget as well. We really wanted to kind of make sure. I know we had a great budget presentation the month before, and but we also had a lot of other presentations that night. This one was just exclusively dedicated just around the budget.
Yeah, and formally the prior one, as I re recollect, was kind of the preliminary view, and this was officially the superintendent's recommended budget.
And so it really kind of kickstarts everything. At the next meeting, we'll have like the public hearing where we're going to go line by line item to kind of take a look and really dig even deeper. And we'll also have an opportunity for the public to get even more engaged. And then subsequent meeting after that, the actual vote. But yeah, so this time was Superintendent Jagir kind of putting forward all of his numbers, and really for it's his budget recommendation, but it's budgets. Him and his team kind of crushed it because they really, really kind of put together multiple budgets moving forward that kind of talked about that level service that we really went into before, of just kind of copying pasting, this school year into next school year. How much is that going to cost? But also that where they have ones where they talk about like partially restore, and they start to bring back a lot of the programming and positions that were cut last year because once again we were in kind of some rough budgetary areas.
Yeah, the middle school after school programs, in particular the late bus to also support those activities. Those are amongst the key items, but there are others in the details, and the details are in the school document, which is up on your page, and we'll share that and include that in the show notes in case people haven't seen it.
Yeah, and so we had it was the superintendent's recommended budget. What he's really kind of looking at, again, it kind of focuses on that like the stabilize and partially restore, but it's going to result it's a t increase from FY24 to FY25, and which is I'm sure we'll t talk about later. It's more money than what Franklin really kind of has just kicking around. And but what he needs, what he did, and which I truly appreciate, is kind of put together this budget that understands the financial realities within the town of Franklin, but still says, as the the leader of this school district, here's exactly how much it's going to cost just to kind of maintain the great services that we have and to kind of start bringing stuff back. If we want to reincorporate even more positions and programs that we have lost over the years, he also started working on that, this Thrive budget, this other model. But instead, the focus is just, kind of protect what we have at all costs and reclaim some of that lost, what was lost last year as well.
Because I think to the extent that prior committees and prior superintendent actually had created the portrait of the graduate ideal with the specific aspects of the qualities and skills and experience that should come with each student as they graduate and leave the high school so that they're prepared for life after, getting to quantify that in, budgetary terms. I think this is the closest we've been to it. And I'm sure that that's where some of the other fine-tune work is still going to take to get to, well, if you really want to do this, especially in today's world, this is what it's going to take.
I couldn't agree with that more, Steve. As far as quantifying it goes, because I am the school committee member obsessed with the budget and sort of by default ended up on school committee because of my involvement as a as just a parent and resident. I typically will point to our school funding and how we continue to remain in the bottom 20% of towns. I think maybe even it's falling even lower. It was 25, a couple, when Ann Bergen was there and she first was talking about, this need. And then we've fallen below 20. And when we continue to talk about what it is that we're trying to output with students, this portrait of a graduate, these creative thinkers, these self-aware individuals, effective communicators, reflective problem solvers. The cost is sort of, are we competing with other towns? And what does that look like? How are we investing in these children and these educators to ensure that we are putting people out into the world that can compete for work and find work that they thrive and love and continue to deliver. People like Dave McNeil, who came from Franklin High. People like Kobe Brangelo, who came from Franklin High, So, when people say like, what's it going to cost? I say, well, a little bit more than it is now. So, yeah.
And I think the other struggle that the community has, and certainly I've been a member of it, and struggled as well, but also doing what I've been doing for, by the way of disclosure, because when my kids were coming home, because the budget issues and fees were starting, and my wife was teaching, and budget issues were affecting the kindergarten classroom as well. She's now retired. The kids are well gone out. One now is back in potentially in the school district with a couple of grandkids eventually coming through the system. The real issues around properly funding our education are still here. And the portrait of graduate at least paints that picture. And the classroom today is not the classroom that even you were in. It's certainly not the classroom that I was in many years ago, whether in Franklin or elsewhere. The nature of the community and the society has changed significantly. So how do you, and that's where the real challenge is, especially coming still out of COVID. COVID, we can't ignore, created on the one hand some opportunities that gave us additional funding, so it postponed the cliff, so to speak, but on the other hand also created some mental health issues, societal issues that the schools are on the forefront of addressing but can't address alone. So on the second side, this town is addressing with police, fire, and that crisis intervention team. You still have a role, but oh, by the way, now that role has morphed somewhat that the needs of the student, whether it's the meals and or the additional support, which is not just the standard teacher, it's the other support personnel who come into the classroom to provide that, what is it, the multi-tier support. whether it's special ed or just somebody who on this particular thing they're falling back, and then they need to kind of the catch up piece. And you do that over what, 5,000, 4,700, 4,800 students, 500 teachers and other personnel. That's a complex matter to do. And of course, that's going to cost some money. And oh, by the way, inflation's been increasing faster than the Prop 2.5 can catch up to. So, yeah, it's no surprise we're in a budget situation.
Yeah, I think sometimes when I speak to parents, you know, sort of my generation and older, a couple things come up. One, to your point, the Surgeon General of the United States has come out and said the children's mental health crisis is the crisis of our lifetime. This is something that is we're all figuring out in real time, and you know, sometimes parents don't understand that. Outside of your ELA class and outside of your chemistry class, there are real needs going on there that must be addressed for the children to learn, that go above and beyond just learning deficits. And the schools have been tasked with sharing that burden with the parents, and trying to work collaboratively to make sure, you know, these kids are okay. And there's a multitude of factors that go into that, from technologies and, you know, being overstimulated and the phones and the social media, and then throw the pandemic into it, and it's sort of a perfect storm. And these teachers take in, you know, 25 kids every day, and you know, even more than that when you're in the middle schools and high schools. So to really spend time and see these children and understand and meet them where they're at is a big challenge when you're significantly under-resourced.
Yeah, and it's not kind of the manufacturing type cookie cutter environment. You can take this, provide 10 minutes, provide 10 minutes, provide 10 minutes, and something important comes out at the end. It needs to be individualized. Each person's coming to it from a different family environment, still has some curriculum needs that needs to be met, but then the accommodations need to be met. And all those variations, never mind unfunded mandates, add to it. It's a complex system.
And I was meeting with Tom Mercer early on, prior to even being on school committee, just kind of to talk to those who allocate the budget and really understand, you know, what got us here. And I remember him saying to me that, you know, when my kids were in school, the community sort of, you know, shared the cost, the burden. And now parents are asked to pay these fees. You know, like if you have two children taking the bus, that's $700 a year. They want to do a couple clubs. They want to do a couple sports. And it's, you know, ends up being over $1,000, $2,000 a year for these parents, when that's kind of a newer thing that I don't think generations before us realize how heavy that burden is on some of these families. So it's challenging for sure.
So do you want to get into kind of the joint budget following your meeting? The joint budget subcommittee met on Wednesday night, and other school committee members re represented you on the school on the joint budget. But then Superintendent Jaeger and Town Administrator Jamie Helen effectively walked through jointly, collaboratively, painting the picture of at least the preliminary model. It shows us we're in a 10.1 million deficit. The numbers will change, so we won't focus too much on the numbers because they will be changing as we go. But as much as they change, there will still be a deficit that we're going to need to resolve in some way.
Well, absolutely. And I thought, you know, really kind of kudos to everybody involved, Lucas and his team, for kind of putting together their presentation, for the town administrator, and really every member that sat, you know, on that board and asked some great questions, because it just, yeah, really kind of laid out the landscape. And to say, you know, here's how commingled everything is. You know, I know Paul was Griffith on the school committee, really kind of talking about, you know, what's that, those sunk costs in terms of like unemployment, You know, because it's where, you know, when we look and we say, well, yeah, you know, we have this, you know, $10 million shortfall, and how, you know, what might that lead to if it's all falls on the schools and there's a whole bunch of layoffs? It's like, well, it's not just the schools that are being impacted, because the town, you know, part of the budget is paying that unemployment benefit as well. And so there's so many different factors that are going into this shortfall that, you know, they really kind of did a great job of digging into, you know. But they also kind of talked, you know, I think there was two rounds of applause throughout the meeting. One of them went to Nancy DiNello properly for doing a wonderful job the day before the presidential primaries, and the other one though was for Paula Murano, the assistant superintendent, because when she presented everything in regards to the specialized programs that we
Yes,
have in district. You know, 'cause see, I know we chatted about this a whole bunch in terms of all the great savings that
yes,
goes on, you
yeah.
know, because when you know, these are programs in which where students, they wouldn't be able to kind of normally be serviced within a traditional classroom setting. And rather than to transport them outside the district, we built some amazing programs within the district. And you know, Paula went and did all the you know, and the whole team did all the numbers and found that by having so many of these great programs, it's about like a $3 million you know, annual savings that we're able to do versus if every child was transported out.
Yeah, and I think Dave McNeil, to his credit, also picked up on that and referenced that. Oh, by the way, and kind of some of the fixed cost drivers, I think it was 2 point something, was the special ed increase. Well, oh, okay, remember, add three something to that because that's what it could be if we did not do it inside. And obviously, there's some money savings to that, but I think educationally and then from a community perspective, now the kids are staying in their own environment amongst their peers, which, how do you quantify that? I mean,
Well,
that's priceless.
when we were in actually Ruth Ann and I both were in the workshop talking about like the visionings. We're looking to, you know, really kind of take a look at all the facilities that we have and how we're going to best service our students kind of moving forward. But we had an architect kind of come on in, and one of the things she commended us on was on those specialized programs about just how fantastic they are and how, you know, rather unique they are in Franklin. That it was something that should kind of be, you know, run all over the place with. But as she kind of kept talking, she's looking at just from a facility standpoint, a servicing education. It's like, you know, she's heard the stories where these students who normally would have to kind of be transported out of district, out of their neighborhood, their towns, to some other great school that would service them, but far away from home, are being invited to kids' birthday parties. Because they're in the class with them,
Sure.
and so they're it's, you know, it's Franklin kids that are in Franklin, and it's invaluable, but it also has you know, $3 million a year savings too. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and that kind of creativity, certainly, I think the town administrator referenced it. And respectfully, while the town has been good in telling the stories of what the shift change that the fire department did, the shift change that the police department did, respectfully, you haven't told as well yet those other great stories. They're starting to come out now, and you need to do more of that.
You couldn't be more right about that. I was actually having a conversation. I think, yeah, Steve and I saw you both actually at the art show that was at Escape into Fiction,
Yes.
which was just dynamite. I mean, things like that just really bring the community together and just brings awareness about the bookstore in town. It just brings, people together to have great conversations and just give kudos to these educators and these kids who just do work that is just lights out. Some of this pottery could be selling for hundreds of dollars. I mean, I see it, out in the retail stores, and I'm like, hey, the art students are doing better work than this. But I was talking to the teacher about that, and often these stories don't get told. It's almost like when you're a goldfish and you ask, like, what is water? It's like when you're in it, you don't even realize how creative the schools get. Everything they do is creative. You talk to like a Jamie Barrett, who was like a household name in this town, who just travels from school to school. you know, teaching these kids music because music programs have been cut so much that we need like traveling teachers in the lower grades. And similar to the art programs, you know, and to Jamie Helen's credit, he came out and said, this is the problem. When we put out stuff like this, the community goes, wow, the schools are really thriving. They're amazing. And I was talking to the art teacher about that, and she said, the problem is the children that are coming up now in the elementary schools are not getting anywhere near, even the middle schools, because it's been so long of an erosion, are not
Sure.
getting what these seniors are putting out. And we are only hoping that we can somewhat keep pace with this level of greatness. You know, she mentioned one of my elementary art student or art teachers is teaching 600 kids. It's just it's unimaginable to think that they can really connect with those kids. And to my earlier point about the mental health crisis going on with children right now, these extracurriculars, they're the things that make kids want to get up and go to school in the morning. They're not getting up to go to, you know, Algebra 2. They're coming up. No offense to the math teachers. I certainly have my share of students that I've met that just get in and love doing math, and it's a game for them. But you know, when a kid gets to make pottery or gets to, you know, work in a forensic lab or just like in the orchestra, my daughter was so excited today because they're having the all school music concert next week. So today she gets pulled from some classes and gets to go for a couple hours with all the other middle schools and rehearse. And she was like, I didn't even have to, you know, check to make sure she got out of bed when her alarm went off, which is usual for like a 12, 13-year-old to say, hey, you up there? You know, because I heard her stomping around and I know that's why. So it's those stories that need to be told. And that art teacher who put that together went out to meet with Escape into Fiction author, set that all up, coordinate all of that on her own personal time. So, you know, those things, they don't like to brag. They don't like to come in and say, do you know how much we're doing above and beyond what our union contract is stating? Just out of their good of their heart, because teaching is a calling. And sometimes people who love their craft so much can be taken advantage of. And I think unfortunately, we're getting there a little bit. We've been sort of spoiled in Franklin.
Yeah, there is a whole lot of good going on because there are good people here. But I think, as what was it, Donna Grady said, you know, it should not be a badge of honor that we always do more with less.
Yeah.
Good quote. I'm going to use it several times.
You know, and I think too, at I know Councilor Hamblin had a great comment, you know, kind of Ruth Ann, right along that line too, of like, are these students the last ones that really are receiving that true, that Franklin education, you know, from pre-K to 12? Because so many times, especially like in the education field, that some of the decisions that are being made aren't really like actualized, aren't felt in seen, you know, for a decade later, you know, like when all of a sudden, you know, if you are having, because of budgetary issues, if you're having a kindergarten classroom sizes of 25 or more, that, you know, you're not really seeing, well, what type of an effect is that having on the students until, you know, years later, when all of a sudden it's like, well, how could the teacher possibly kind of be able to deliver all the material and make sure it's stuck with each one of the kids when they were managing 25, you know, 5-year-olds running all over the place? Or, you know, I know this is last year, but my colleague Al Charles had this. We had the jazz band kind of come. They had just recently they won an award, or they being so we kind of came in. They had an opportunity to be honored, and he asked them all to kind of raise their hands about how long were you all playing instruments for Franklin Schools. And it's like, well, you know what? And there was a lot that was obviously, it's, you know, if you're playing an instrument, it's not something you just kind of pick up on freshman year for most people and then just kind of run with it. It is years and years and years of training. And when we're unfortunately not able to kind of provide financially those services and have, you know, like middle school bands and music at the elementary level, and that's not to say that, you know, this isn't all happening, but that it's, you know, you'll start to see that when all of a sudden you're like, well, what happened to those, you know, incredible high schoolers that were playing all these amazing instruments. It's like, well, unfortunately, they didn't have, you know, for the last 8 years, they didn't have that, weren't afforded that opportunity. And so we're just really at this incredible critical moment. And we're going to feel the kind of like the pain immediately if we're not, you know, depending on how the funding situation goes. But I think there's also going to be these massive ripples that will slowly be felt over the years too. And you kind of realize like, well, what happened?
Yeah, and I think at least one of the other key points, and certainly we can reinforce it here, the real opportunity is now we're having a civil conversation around what we as a community really want to do in funding the kids.
And because that's what it is. You know, we have to make a conscious decision of what type of community and what, you know, what type of a village, you know, are we? Mm-hmm. And for this next generation that's kind of coming through Franklin. And, but, you know, Jamie had laid out this roadmap back in May and the third last day of the budget hearing. And, you know, to now where we are at the joint budget, where there was a very clear plan forward, you know, which is for the school committee to kind of draft a letter. They promised me I don't have to write more than two lines. Maybe I'll probably.
If you want to go to two paragraphs, they won't hold you. They won't really reject it. But two sentences,
you know, a minimum of two sentences. And but where, you know, we're going to, you know, hopefully, you know, speak on everyone on my colleagues' behalf. But, you know, we'll kind of go and we'll, you know, look at this and present this letter to town council so that they can kind of continue to have that conversation. Because at legally, it'll be the town council that would vote on whether or not to add a ballot question. Mm-hmm. And so, right now it's going to be the school committee that's going to present that letter to kind of continue to, I don't say to trigger anything, because we're only here because of the amazing path that was laid out, you know, before us by, you know, some amazing people, you know, like my predecessor, you know, like the chairwoman, Denise Spencer, before her, Dr. Bergen, Roberta Trahan. There's so many amazing community leaders that paved this path that we now are walking. And, you know, that's where we stand. And we kind of have this plan laid out for where we're going to go from there.
The other point in reinforcing that we're not spending a lot of time on numbers, because the numbers will change by the nature of the discussion. We'll get better stories. Maybe some stories won't work. Maybe the numbers will get reworked. Maybe we'll find some number here better than another. And then ultimately, yes, to your point, the request will at least go to town council. Town council potentially would, at least in maybe even a preliminary, another joint budget subcommittee type discussion, because it really has to be a joint decision. Whether FinCom is included there or not, I would suspect they will be, because they're really the special arm of the town council to that extent. But then school committee, town council ultimately is the one. Yea, verily, this will be a date. This will be the time. This will be the amount. And then it's going to be up to the citizens and registered voters to come out and vote yay or nay. Mm-hmm. Obviously, then after that, other potential serious discussions are going to have to be had. If it's a no, that's some significant cuts. If it's a yes, well, we also heard at the joint budget that, okay, just if you get that, then how are we going to measure that? And is that going to be enough? Or are we going to have to come back for more at some point in time? I mean, some of the back of the math, even I think Councilor Hamblin was saying it's a problem for the next couple of years. So are we going to be able to afford a bigger bite this time that'll solve both? I don't know. That's going to be part of the discussion.
And you know that I'm also the chair of One Franklin currently. So that started well before I was on school committee. And the predecessors, to Dave's point, that, you know, Denise Spencer and Camille and Elise and just the Ann Bergens, who stood on the football field sort of pleading with the town council back in the day that this wasn't, what, 2020, that this wasn't sustainable and that we were you know, approaching a fiscal cliff. They started this back then. And then this COVID money was given to us and in the form of a grant to help get us through the pandemic. And that has dried up and legally can't even be spent. We had to use that money up. And I think bringing everybody together, we get a lot. I got a lot of credit at that joint budget meeting, but it's really those people that have paved the way. And when they would approach, town council or the town administrator and say, what are we going to do? And we didn't have at the time a grassroots organization, which is what you need. It's a lot harder when you're on the school committee to go, hey, I'm going to go chair a grassroots organization and start that up, than it is for me who was in it and then was elected to the school committee, knowing that that's what I was doing. These things are delicate, when you're an elected leader, or more so, even much more so when you're a municipal employee. So I think a good thing that's sort of come of this crisis is people are beginning to understand how our town of Franklin government works. I remember, I was friendly with the town council. I wasn't on town the last couple of years prior, but I know that you guys were getting inundated during budget cuts with just, kind of people really upset with you all. And it was hard to convey. You don't want to say, hey, don't, it's not our fault. It's we just get this much money and that's all we can do, because we're trying to keep the government operating collaboratively. But people now understand that there's a process to this, and people are showing up in droves. So much so that I think I may, I'm sort of like, I might as well put it out there. I'm sort of looking to pass the torch for the next few months, just to be able to kind of free me up even more to be more of an educator from the purview of school committee, to go around and sort of be able to kind of, be in the schools and educate when opportunities arise and things, and not come from it from somebody who's running a campaign. It would just be easier. I can do it. I've certainly cleared it with the ethics board, and Nancy DiNello has called the Office of Campaign Finance. But at the same time, it would just give me a lot more ability to, be at the table with school committee and focus on that. So, if you know anyone that wants to help me run the One Franklin group, I'd love to pass the torch, Steve.
Well, hopefully somebody listening will say, I can try.
Yeah, give me a call. We'll talk.
So you certainly have a full plate coming ahead of you. You've got a formal budget hearing. You've got a formal budget vote. I believe there's also a subcommittee for the budget that meets before the next meeting. You'll have to draft a letter. But related to those, specific budget issues, you also have the facility planning, kind of the school's version of the master plan, comprehensive facility school planning, underway. That I think you have a timeline for completing before the end of the year, calendar school year, but it may or may not have a significant impact for the budget because the budget decisions sound like they're going to be happening before that. But you're at least doing the due diligence this time around, and again, leveraging at least what was done in the prior two efforts with the facilities analysis and then the redistricting, you realize that you needed to have a more comprehensive piece, which is what you're about at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Where we really just, within the budget, Lucas talks about, the facilities and the educators that we have and the students, and it's really just to kind of take a look at that whole landscape and figure out, what's the best model, for this. What's like the best way to kind of continue to educate Franklin students over the next 10 years, especially looking at like demographic studies as well. And so we're really kind of hitting on all that. We're doing a deep dive into all of our facilities, which I know was also kind of brought up during the joint budget, because there's maintenance costs for all of them, especially for maintenance costs for all of these facilities. But then just to kind of take a look at the enrollment has kind of declined, and there has been enrollment-based cuts along the way as well. But we want to kind of be able to kind of project out for the next 10 years because you do start to kind of see an uptick in a lot of the enrollment numbers. And we want to be able to continue to kind of follow those enrollment ones, make budgetary decisions based on the enrollment now, but also based on what the enrollment's going to be tomorrow. And also figure out, as we've spoken about plenty of times before, the school and the classroom, looks a lot different today than it did when we were in school. And it's
Sure.
going to look a lot different today than what will in 10 years from now. And it's just to kind of take a look at that and, look ahead to figure out what's going to be the best way that we can kind of still maintain that portrait of a graduate, educate from, pre-K to 12, but do so sustainably as well. And so it's a heavy lift. I'm incredibly grateful working on that and with the superintendent and his team for all the work that's going on there. But yeah, we're kind of just taking a look at the whole entire scope, all of our facilities, and tied in with our enrollment numbers too.
So I think to reinforce a point we talked about earlier, the prior study kind of excluded those special programs, which, as we talked about earlier, actually, while they take more room or have less students in a room, actually bring a significant savings to the district by servicing those students in-house. So evaluating that, and I think even in the Paula Morano's update, you're already looking to expand one of the programs next year, depending upon those demographics, are there going to be additional expansion? So maybe some spaces that, well, may be available, may not be available because of those expansions. All of that needs to get baked in, and that in itself is, as you said, a heavy lift.
But there's a lot actually. Probably by the time this post will already might have already had two meetings. Ruth Ann and I are on like day two of the educational visioning, which is happening. It'll be on next Monday, but right after the weekend. But we're really kind of digging into like the visioning and the facilities that we have. And Kate Jessup from Castle Booze is back to give a great presentation. I'm thrilled about that. And like on Wednesday, the subcommittee meets, and then shortly thereafter, we'll have even more data and more information and reports. And so there's a lot that's kind of coming out. But yeah, we're doing our best to try to get a lot of this information out to the public in a timely manner.
Because a lot of people, we saw the knee-jerk reaction when we tried to close, when we were closing Davis Thayer. I mean, the consensus we got Elise and Denise on board with the school committee, but people don't like those little neighborhood schools closed. They want their little neighborhood schools, and so we really need to understand what are the big benefits outside of just cost benefit, because the buildings themselves aren't don't make a huge dent in the budget because they come with teachers and they come with needs. Outside, curriculum, that stuff doesn't go away. But when you do have a larger side of kind of campus with, if you do consolidate an elementary school with another and you have more teachers to collaborate and you can take some money that you save with closing one and maybe invest in another and create these cool, modern space needs that are what corporate America is kind of more capable of investing in more of a rapid kind of fire. There, we're just through these workshops and through just learning about what people are doing all over this country in education, we're really inspired. I don't have an education background, so some of the things that they are showing us that other districts and states and towns are doing are really cool. Like the entire center, of the school is a huge library that runs the length of the school, and all the classrooms are off those. And then there's these shared spaces where you can do project-based learning, which we know is some of the best ways to teach kids to get them in doing the work with their hands. And we're really limited. Our high school's got some really cool spaces in there, but our elementary and middle schools are really sort of struggling, not only with just like roofs and facilities needs, but space needs. And space needs what was really, really lacking on that first sort of audit that when we didn't make
And
any big moves
then
last
I think it was
year.
also referenced, but the newest middle and elementaries were actually built 20, 25 years ago. So they're already coming up to kind of that internal infrastructure replacement stuff. Never mind the oldest ones, which go back even older than that. 1970s and I think 1960s. So yeah, this space is certainly at a premium, but now you're at least doing the analysis and preparing the answers to the questions which will inevitably come up.
And that's exactly it. Is that like, right now we really wanted to do the best that we could to kind of come in, no preconceived ideas or anything, and just but to lay all that groundwork and say, what's the next 10 years going to look like? based on all these other threads of, you know, enrollment, envisioning, in the facilities that we have, and the cost of doing business. And so it's a lot of great work, but I know we can talk quite at length on that. I'm sure.
We'll have to schedule a separate one once you get closer to that. And being mindful of time, thank you certainly for spending time today to kind of recap both the school committee and then the joint budget, and kind of teasing for what's coming. So hopefully people won't be bashful if they have additional questions or comments. Your info is certainly on the town page. It'll be in the show notes. Again, thank you for taking time to share from your perspectives, because I think it will certainly help the civil discussion we want to foster as we go forward.
And Steve, thanks as always for giving us this opportunity. And for the public at large, yeah, any questions, never hesitate to reach out, or if you just see me getting a coffee and a bagel, feel free to ask a question and stop me.
Yeah, thank you very much, Steve. Engagement is key. Anything we can do to get more people involved in this is everything. So appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you. And quick reminder, of course, for the listeners, we do this because Franklin matters.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.